talk to us now and go to the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT. Critically analyzing global affairs. This is the Hervoy Moritz Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Howdy ho. Phone lines are open both hours today. So as our guests come on, feel free to dial in and chat. I'll be chatting with Stuart Hooper, a lecturer and academic who actually focuses on the military-industrial complex, globalism, the kind of things that we like here at TNT. And of course, Tim Hinchliffe of sociable.co, great resource. They cover Davos in depth. Actually, I think one of the top outlets that cover Davos, Tim puts out some of the very first crazy clips that come from our global elites. Some news. I start off with a tweet from Stephen Mosher, who was a guest of mine on my podcast, the head of the Population Research Institute. He says, "The global elites want most of us dead. They are members of a death cult, but instead of drinking the Kool-Aid themselves, they want you to." So, yeah. An asteroid the size of a delivery truck will whip past Earth this week, one of the closest such encounters ever recorded. So if it's not, an health issue, it's the weather, or it's an asteroid, or it's nukes. So it's quite an interesting party here on planet Earth. And it's been reported that Facebook and Instagram are reinstating Trump. And my immediate reaction to that was, well, one, I'm kind of not caring anymore, but two, the damage has been done. Like, it's pointless now. I mean, if I were Trump, I wouldn't even use them, because it's like the purpose has been fulfilled, which was to, remove him out of office, destroy the momentum that he was building. That's all been destroyed. And now you can come back on after we've neutered you. And it's like, no, I would be angry. I wouldn't want to join. But that has happened. And this was a shocking news. So a friend of mine, Ramiro Romani of Above Phone and Take Back Our Tech, who was organizing the Greater Reset, he posted to his Take Back Our Tech Telegram that he was running an internet speed test today using Ookla's map of 5G deployments. And he was shocked. He says, "I was thinking that 5G wouldn't have reached many of the suburbs in America and especially towns in Mexico, but I was wrong. It's being deployed everywhere. You can check out the map at speedtest.net, Ookla-5G-map. It's crazy. These 5G things are now spreading all over the place. It's unbelievable. They seem to be restricted to the urban areas. So you might want to get out of the urban areas. But then I don't doubt that they would start to come online, outside of the urban areas and move into the rural areas eventually. So that is quite shocking and crazy, if you ask me. And just some more Mexico news. Mexico is becoming a technocratic police state, just like all countries are and will under globalism. There's a new law that is going to allow the Mexican military now to detain civilians like myself. How about that for constitution and human rights and all of that stuff? I'm sorry, no. And, AMLO López Obrador talks a good talk. He came out today and blamed media pressure for Germany's sending of tanks to Ukraine. He said, quote, "Media power is used by the oligarchies in the world to subjugate governments," end quote. Well, Mr. President, why are you allowing oligarchies to subjugate Mexico? And why are you promoting a North American union? Yeah, interesting. And what else we got going on? Of course, by now many people have heard the German foreign minister basically declare what we already knew from day one, that it's war on Russia, basically. There's a clip where she said, basically, yeah, we are at war with war against Russia. So basically, that's like World War III. So as many people I've interviewed, I would agree with that, you know, World War III has already started. It's just a matter of moving from the appetizer to the main dish, you know, act one to act two. So, yeah, expect, you know, more fireworks this year, if not next. And Antonio Tajani, who is some functionary, Italy's foreign minister, basically says EU is dominated by US. It's so boring reading this stuff. This is like stuff we knew 20 years ago. But okay, whatever. You know, he says Europe does not have a real foreign or defense policy. We always come after the Americans. That's been the case since 1954. McFly, the European Union was a CIA State Department project. That's in academic papers. More than 50% of the EU integration process was funded by the CIA and State Department. Is this supposed to be news? But okay, whatever. All right. A reminder that at TNT Radio, we never go home. Yes, I do not sleep. I'm wired on caffeine 24/7. We are committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7 online globally, no matter what. Unless, of course, Klaus Schwab shuts off the internet. We've got you covered on TNT Radio.
Agreeing on the fundamental.
We can't trust any politician.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
A very famous person, dude, just made a very unexpected guest appearance on Russian TV in a very unconventional way. Here's a clue. It's a guy who likes to play piano with his genitalia and dress up as a woman. Here with the story, joining me now is TNT Radio News producer Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus.
Ah, Hervory, spoiler alert. I guess Zelensky. You remember that movie V for Vendetta? I'm sure you do.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, there's a very famous scene in there where they hijack the airwaves in order to make a very important message. That's immediately what I was reminded of. This is fascinating. What happened is that, yes, indeed, Ukrainian clown President Volodymyr Zelensky made a surprise appearance on Russian TV on Wednesday when digital broadcasts were disrupted in an apparent hacker attack across southwestern regions of the country. You can't make this stuff up. This is awesome. So TV viewers in Belgorod region, as well as in Crimea, reported that their viewing was interrupted by an address from Zelensky, who was speaking Ukrainian. It lasted for about a minute, though, before programs continued as scheduled. Crimean officials blamed the incident on a hacker attack, pointing fingers at Ukraine's intelligence services and their mischief. Let's see, there's one advisor to the governor of the area, Oleg Kruchkov. He indicated that the channels have already been, quote unquote, returned to normal, and pointed out that even at the beginning of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, that, quote, the Americans gave the Ukrainian special services access to all the codes of the main TV channels to rebroadcast via the internet. He said this during a message that was broadcast using Telegram. He said, operators many time use the signal from these lines. When things go wrong on the front, Ukrainians hack the system, but most of the bugs have already been eliminated, and soon they won't be able to do it. He also said, speaking to RIA Novosti, quote, facing a deplorable situation at the front lines, the Ukrainian special services resort to hacking into internet broadcasting and displaying their Zelensky clown. He said that. At the same time, on-air broadcasting on TV channels has been going on and is going on as usual, end quote. Belgorod authorities, however, were not so quick to assign blame, stating that a probe into the incident has been launched. The disruption affected satellite broadcasts. According to the press service of the regional government, operators had to redirect the signal from a backup satellite in order to flush out Zelensky's address. Wow, they did that in about 60 seconds. That's pretty quick. Assorted disruptions of TV broadcasts have repeatedly occurred among the ongoing hostilities between Russia and Ukraine, affecting both sides of the ongoing conflict. One of the most notable incidents of this kind happened last June when two Ukrainian sports channels showed an interview with Russian President Vladimir Putin instead of a World Cup football match. That probably pissed people off more than having to see Zelensky for 60 seconds, I'm sure. I'm only curious, like, if they didn't cut him off, what was the speech? Nobody made any mention. They just said it was showing, re-airing some speech that he made. And I was curious if it wouldn't have been this other thing that I caught the news where Zelensky did a video message speaking to an association of U.S. enterprises, stating that basically he says Kyiv is working with some giants of the finance and military industry, and it's offering quote-unquote big business opportunities to any American company interested in working there. According to Zelensky, he said, quote, "We have already managed to attract attention and have cooperation with such giants of international financial aid and investment world as BlackRock, JP Morgan, and Goldman Sachs. Such American brands as Starlink or Westinghouse have already become a part of our Ukrainian way," end quote. So what do you think, Hrvor? Do you think they hacked the Russian airwaves to try to recruit some business interests out of Russian television viewers? What the heck? What do you think of all this?
I'm waiting for Zelensky to interrupt our TNT broadcast, Ruckus. One of these days, all of a sudden, you know, we'll hear Zelensky's voice, or eventually, you know, Klaus Schwab or Bill Gates, you know, beaming in. I mean, we've talked about this before. I've never witnessed, or even studying history, I've never witnessed anything like what we are witnessing now, where we have the leader of a nation at war just beaming in everywhere that will have, not everywhere, not just everywhere that will have him, but just him, like, aggressively coming in where he's not wanted. You know, we've seen everything from the Golden Globes to, I don't know, all of these cultural entertainment events that have nothing to do with anything. And, you know, now into Russia. And yeah, it's strange. And just on that last note, that's crazy that he's saying that they've managed to attract giants, right? BlackRock, JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, Starlink, of course. And this really, more and more when I come to think about it, this is a great reset war. And I was just reading a post from Robin Monotti, who's sort of well known. He was a guest on my podcast, to an article he posted 2 years ago on his Telegram. It's called The Coming World War III. And I was thinking about this as well simultaneously these days, that I don't think it's enough, you know, the whole pandemic and climate change. I think they need to deliberately make things economically, socially, you know, militarily, geopolitically worse, where the situation has to get much worse for everyone on the planet in order to justify, you know, bringing in martial law, a militarized states, you know, of many states across the planet, you know, destroying infrastructure and then bringing in, you know, all sorts of restrictions and, you know, free speech restrictions, restrictions of movement, you know, rationing, all these sorts of things. And there is that clip from Ukraine, like 1 or 2 years ago, where one of the Ukrainian ministers put out a video. People can find this video clip where they were going to remake Ukraine into this basically digital technocracy. So it's basically, I think they are using Ukraine to prototype the new sort of smart system that they would want to replicate in the rest of the world.
Yeah, and I don't think they abandoned that plan. You're right. That's been the goal, is to make Ukraine into a full functioning utopian smart city, all based on all of this stuff. So maybe that's what he's doing. Maybe he's the fundraiser. That's why he gets so much attention. Dude, I was thinking about this. This guy, like you said, he's just popped up everywhere. Like, You remember the like jaywalking segments on Jay Leno's show, like the man on the street, that when you just ask the normal person, like, and it's embarrassing because they don't even know who the president is or their history or current events or the names of celebrities. And you're like, ah, ha, ha, you laugh. But I think if we were to do that right now and ask a bunch of people about like, oh, who's in charge of this country? Who's in charge of this country? Who's just pick three big countries at random. And I think people might have trouble being able to tell you who's the leader of those countries. But if you tell them who's the leader of Ukraine, I bet you they can tell you who that is. And I don't think that's by mistake. So he is certainly a household name all over the planet. And that must stand for something. And yet again, here he is, you know, I'll go back to this little fundraising tour. This address was specifically to the National Association of State Chambers during a meeting in Boca Raton, Florida on Monday. And he's literally, he says, everyone can become a big business by working with Ukraine in all sectors, from weapons and defense to construction, from communication to agriculture, from transport to IT, from banks to medicine. Hello, we're in the middle of like a war. And you're like saying, hey, this is the place to be. There's something going on here. And I think it's that smart city stuff, 100%. I need to do a little bit of a deeper dive and find out if that's still going. Listeners, if you're out there and you know more about the Ukrainian smart city, go to our contact pages on TNT and send us an info, or just Hervory at TNTradio.live or Ruckus at TNTradio.live.
Yeah, well, yeah, my email is hervoymodic@tntradio.live. But in any case, they can go to your page or my page and just use the contact form. And yeah, what else was I going to say? I was going to say, yeah, most people know who Zelensky is, but I don't know how many times I've asked people, do you know about the World Economic Forum, Davos? And they look at me with a blank stare. Like they got no idea what's going on. In any case, the phone lines will be open if you want to talk with my two upcoming guests, where we'll be talking about geopolitics, foreign policy, deep politics, Davos, of course. So the phone numbers are at the top of the page, tntradio.live, and I'll be right back after this break.
Jeremy Nell on TNT Radio.
South Africa right now is experiencing scheduled rolling blackouts, and they are very bad. We're talking 8 to 10 hours per day of no electricity countrywide, and this has been intensified over the last 12 months. What that means is that getting off the grid obviously is a priority, but it's a slow process. It's a very expensive process. And when I was doing my show on, I think, Tuesday and Wednesday, I was running off an inverter. But the problem was that the exchange that was supplying my broadband internet, which basically supplies to my local area, it ran out of power because it also has battery backup. And when there are too many hours of blackouts, the exchanges don't get enough charge to their backup supply. And so everything goes down, and it affects our cell phone towers as well.
Sounds to me like your own country's declared war on you guys, and they're trying to shut everything down. I mean, it's very obvious to me, and I'm sure they're trying to do this all around the world.
Yeah, I think we are a test case for the World Economic Forum and the Sustainable Development Agenda and all that sort of thing, because there's no possible way that you can have scheduled rolling blackouts and then still blame it on maintenance.
Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in.
They trust TNT Radio
and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Our lines are now open. Call Hivori Morich now from the U.S. and Canada. Call 1-888-201-6425. From the UK, call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
You heard the man. Feel free to dial in. If you do, try to be on point, on topic, concise. Don't be lazy. Don't be shy. And I'm joined once again by Stuart J. Hooper. It's been a while. He's a lecturer, PhD researcher, studying the things that I would be studying if I were still in academia, military industrial complex, elites, war, and globalism. Find him on Twitter at Stuart, that's S-T-U-A-R-T, J Hooper, and subscribe to his growing YouTube channel as well, just by typing in his name. Welcome back to TNT Radio, Stuart.
Great to be here, Vori. Been a while, like you said, but good to be back. I'm back on the YouTube saddle now as well. Been covering the World Economic Forum. Lots going on in Ukraine now as well. But yeah, I appreciate the support and thanks for having me back.
Yeah, I saw you hit 1,000 plus followers on Twitter. That's great. You're somewhere nearing 3,500 subscribers on YouTube. So I think, you know, rising tide lifts all boats. We need to help each other out. And I enjoy your work. You know, I'm sure you've been busy, you know, being a researcher, teacher, PhD program. I mean, that's a lot of work. You know, how was your end of year, your start of year? You know, how are things?
Well, at the end of the year, honestly, I got into a bit of a rut with some of this stuff, and you know, focusing on the worst of the world for, like you said, pretty much all day, every day, that can bear down on you after a while. But yeah, came back and shifted onto a new chapter with the PhD stuff, so that started to get the ball rolling again there. And there have been, like I said, the massive developments in Ukraine over the last couple of days. So things to look at, things to focus on, but otherwise mostly good.
All right. Well, you know, let's talk a bit about Davos. That's a big topic. I was last week, I was at the Mexican Davos, the anti-Davos, the greater reset organized by folks like Derek Brose and John Bush, and you know, Catherine Austin Fitz was speaking virtually. And I met Del Bigtree like twice in the elevator of the high wire. But it's really in your last couple of YouTube videos we're discussing Davos. And I mean, it's no longer a conspiracy theory. And I've been watching some of the clips from Davos last week. I mean, it's just, it's so in your face. So many of the things that they're saying, like the Saudi minister saying there will be no cars in the future, talking about putting us in the metaverse. I mean, just going on and on. What are your thoughts on WEF and Davos?
Excellent question, and very glad to hear that alternative media, alternative thinkers, alternative philosophers are making their own conferences and events to bring people together to put up an organized resistance against this sort of thing. Because if you do really want to resist it, you need to be close to as organized as these other people are, which is extremely well organized. Now, in terms of what the WEF represents and how we can understand it, which I think is absolutely not from a conspiratorial point of view whatsoever, is you have to look at what this is and what it does. And it's really an incubator for global elites. This is not necessarily a place where you'd find national or local elites. This is for the real cream of the crop, the people that are at the very tip top of global power structures coming together and coordinating with one another their next moves, what they may be. And slowly but surely, over the following months and years, you'll start to see these things play out. And the central point that you can argue to make the case that this is not conspiratorial at all is, well, when you think to your national politicians going to an organization like this, the World Economic Forum, when you think about even your national banking leaders going to a place like this, did anybody ask them to do this? Was this the will of the people? Did anybody in the United States really, really, really want the American representatives to go to the World Economic Forum? Did anyone in the United Kingdom or any individual country, did any of the people in those places want their leaders to go to this place? Probably not. There was no vote. There was no discussion. There was no debate. There was certainly no compromise. And here we are. So what you have is a massive democratic deficit in all of these institutions, the World Economic Forum, the Bilderberg Group, NATO, all of this sort of stuff. There's a big democratic deficit. The everyday man on the street has absolutely no voice and no influence in these places.
There's a great thread that I think it's coming from where you're coming from. It's Collingwood. It's on Twitter. It's a writer, editor. They got a new podcast called Multipolarity. Good stuff. And he's kind of talking along the same lines as you, where he's, I'll just try to throw out quickly some of the key points in the thread, where he says, Schwab and the WEF advocate for a system where decisions involve NGOs, civil society groups, academic experts, and most importantly, multinational corporations. What this means in practice is that policy is insulated from democracy by transferring policy decision-making from the international level, where electorates have some say through their governments, to the supranational level by placing a self-selected group of unelected, unaccountable stakeholders, mainly corporations, in charge of global decisions concerning everything from energy and food production to the media and public health. And this is the sort of globalism we've gotten, driven by stakeholder interests, mainly corporations, rather than electorates or citizens, kind of as you're saying. And this has, of course, benefited the sort of people who attend Davos. And then he goes on to say, which I thought was interesting, that most of the leaders in governing parties in Europe share the WEF view of stakeholder globalism. And many of the high people in the high office, the politicians currently occupied by WEF Young Global Leaders Program alumni, they all believe in the supranational corporation, NGO, an expert-driven form of policy making, insulated at least partially from the surly business of democracy, national sovereignty, and governments with popular mandates. And so, yeah, I can sort of attest to that, you know, having been at the number one, basically, globalist university in all of Latin America, the Tecnológico de Monterrey, which was the only university in all of Latin America to formally be part of and invited to Davos, to the World Economic Forum. And, 99% of the students that attend that school are already plugged into supranationalist globalism, stakeholder capitalism. They get their brains, they get brainwashed, inducted into this system, and they drink the Kool-Aid and they really believe it. So, Stuart, we're going to have to jump to our news break. Again, phone lines are open. Call in if you want to chat to us. We'll be right back.
The news.
Right here.
TNT Radio News.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Germany announced it will give Ukraine 14 powerful Leopard 2 tanks with dozens more potentially to come. Russia has called this escalation very dangerous. Meanwhile, several senior Ukrainian officials, including frontline governors, have been caught up in a corruption scandal. Chris Hipkins was sworn in Wednesday as New Zealand's 41st Prime Minister following the unexpected resignation last week of Jacinda Ardern.
On air and on the app.
I listen on the app.
Stay up to date around the clock.
I listen, therefore I know.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Back with lecturer Stuart Hooper. Find his YouTube channel. Further thoughts, Stuart, on Davos?
Yeah, I mean, I think the quotes and the points that you just made are absolutely dead on. And the idea that, well, we elected these individuals to make the choices for us, well, that used to hold some weight when at least that was at the national level. But now this is far beyond that. This is transnational. This is beyond the state. This isn't even between the nation states anymore, international. This is transnational. This is far beyond it. This is completely beyond the reach of the average everyday voter. And I think, however, enough people are starting to wake up to this that maybe the idea of an organized resistance may slowly begin to grow here, slowly but surely. But overall, this is just an institution that people really need to pay attention to. And like I also mentioned, those other couple of institutional groupings as well, the Bilderberg Group and NATO. Very, very, very important. Central to how the world works, and also completely removed from democratic control. Even when you listen to Kirby, the Pentagon spokesman in the United States, whenever he talks about NATO, he always talks about, well, we're going to do what NATO needs. We're going to do what NATO wants. So in other words, you're not going to do what the American people want. You're going to do what this transnational, supranational organization wants you to do. Again, there are big, big problems here that I don't think governments have made any attempt to tackle whatsoever, which is part of the reason why there is this growing resistance to this. And to just call people a conspiracy theorist is absolutely ridiculous when these institutions do exist, they are real, and they do have an impact on our world.
Yeah, and I was listening, you know, my hour two guest, Tim, was on Russell Brand's program recently covering WEF last week. And, so, you know, I think following him was Michael Schellenberger, who was more optimistic, saying that it's peak Davos, that they have been outed with all of this, all of us talking about it. I'm not as convinced. I think they're still going strong, unfortunately, but we need to keep doing what we are doing. I mean, they've captured mayors and state governors and presidents from all across the planet. I wouldn't really call that peak Davos. And just as we were talking before you joined, I mean, Zelensky has made deals with BlackRock and Vanguard and all these people to rebuild Ukraine. So it's the Davos crowd, you know, coming in with those infrastructure contracts and banking. And yeah, it's not looking good. So we need to double down our efforts. And, you know, something interesting, I saw you post retweet from Inderjit. It was in Parmar. It's been a guest of mine. Inderjit Parmar. About you said in the U.S., national security is now an entire field of study. U.S. government providing massive grants to universities to start these programs run by former military chiefs now wearing a suit and tie. And of course, Inderjit shared a article from Declassified UK, which is a great resource, Mark Curtis, about how former MI6 chief and ex-CIA officer are offering program for intelligence practitioners at Cambridge and other UK universities. Your sort of thoughts on this interesting, nexus between academia and the military-industrial complex.
Yeah, I was in the midst of this while I was out at the University of New Mexico for a couple of years doing some graduate studies. And when you do graduate studies, you often move around different departments, you experiment with different classes, different fields, and see what works to try to come up with something interesting for your thesis. And about halfway through my time there, they were actually developing an entire department. I don't remember if it was called a Department of National Security, but it was a national security program to offer. I think they were starting out as a minor, but these are evolving into majors. So you can be a major in national security studies. And what they are essentially training the students for is to go and be a new cog in the national security state, to go and work in the CIA, the NSA, the FBI, any of these big alphabet soup agencies. And this is going on directly at American universities. And they hand out flyers and leaflets and all of this sort of stuff to really try to sell the idea to the students as well. And of course, in all of these, you'll never have one mention of any wrongdoing that any of these agencies have ever actually been caught doing. You never find any mentions of things like that. It's all for national security, defending the country, and you can do your part. And also, you get a great retirement, good salary, and benefits, that sort of thing. Well, that may be true, but this is generally not good. The idea of a liberal education traditionally has been to free your mind of ties to any other indoctrination that you may have been exposed to previously. This is the furthest thing I can think of from a liberal education. That's not what this is doing. This is not freeing your mind at all. This is attempting to do precisely what the old school liberal education should have been doing. This is attempting to indoctrinate people into this national security mindset, this way of thinking, this way of understanding the world. And ultimately, I don't think generally that it's a good thing. The guys that were running this thing that I met, they were really nice people. They seemed well-intentioned, but ultimately they were buying into the classic understanding of American military and intelligence power, that it's just to defend the United States. We're just doing this to spread peace and democracy, this sort of stuff. Unless people start to become more critical of this and understand what's really going on here, these structures are only going to continue to exist in such a disastrous position.
Yeah, this brings to mind my experience in my graduate studies in Geneva. And I have to admit, I mean, it was quite fascinating. You know, I got a box with my old papers. I'd have to dig up some of the names, but you know, I had Curtis Dobler, Dutch American international human rights lawyer, who was Saddam's defense lawyer. He was a cool professor. But I had another guy who was American, you know, regarding what you've been talking about, straight out of the military industrial complex, I think a current or former CIA agent. He taught us the whole, from a status quo perspective, you know, Cold War. I had a guy from Australia who taught us, he consulted for the Rockefeller Foundation, and there were rumors that he was Australian intelligence. And, you know, some of us said Bush was a war criminal, he sort of like looked at us aghast, like, how could you believe George Bush is a war criminal? And so it's just fascinating being around some of these folks. I did have some professors that were the real deal. They would tell me, like, after class, you know, meeting for a beer in the rainy, train station. I'm not even joking that I was hanging out with some of my profs, and they're like, hey, you should. And this was like 15 years ago. They were telling me, hey, you should read Voltaire Network. And, you know, I interviewed the head of Voltaire Network last year, Terry Masana. And, you know, he's like, you should read Daniel Esselin. I actually ended up organizing a conference for Daniel Esselin. Like, I can't believe, you know, the experience that I've had. But, you know, I think some of these profs, that the kind that you're talking about, some of it, I think, you know, they do it for that extra money. Some do it for status as an academic, and as well, I think, to push the agenda that you were talking about. Moving on to something you did a video about as well, these classified documents now coming out about Biden having classified documents. I think Mike Pence now, and then others now are being name, you know, first it was Trump and now it's Biden. There are some analysts floating the idea that maybe the system, the establishment, wants to do away with Biden. And it's funny because 2 weekends ago, YouTube deleted, gave me a strike, couldn't do anything for a week, of a 2-year-old video, a podcast interview I did with former U.S. intel officer James Rawls of the super popular survival blog, where he predicted 2 years ago on my podcast that Biden wouldn't finish his term. And now you've got these classified docs coming out, which could, you know, be used to end his term early. What thoughts do you have on what's going on with Biden and Kamala and the crew?
Yeah, I haven't been paying close attention to what just happened with Pence, but with Biden, I think it's almost probably undeniable at this point that this is definitely a shift to try to get him out. And I noticed this back probably, I want to say November of last year. You could start to see the Washington Post, the New York Times, CNN, they were starting to post opinion pieces that were getting very critical of Biden on a lot of levels, including the age problem, which I think to a degree is undeniable at this point. I don't think that the backers of Biden think that he is capable of winning the next election. Yes, they managed to get through this midterm somewhat unscathed, not entirely, of course, but they kept the Senate. And I think that's primarily just because of the abortion issue. I don't think that was anything at all to do with Joe Biden. And I think, again, the people that are really in charge here know that too. So they're trying to get rid of him. They want a new candidate, but that's going to be a tall order. I don't know who would be capable of being a Democratic presidential candidate at this point. Republicans, I think, is a bit more obvious. You've got your DeSantis, you've got Trump. If I'm DeSantis, I'm probably going to let Trump run. And if he wins, he wins. He's only got one term. After that, he'll be gone. If he loses, he'll probably be gone as well. But yeah, on the Democratic side of things, not really sure what they're going to do. But this is ultimately, though, an interesting look at what happens behind the scenes with politics sometimes. And the fact that this also, I think, comes back to that Democratic deficit point that I was making earlier. Why is it legitimate that American citizens cannot know what their government is doing on so many different topic areas? This, again, is a big problem. If we're saying this is a democracy of the people, by the people, for the people, oh, and by the way, spending all of the people's money in the process while taxing them to hell and back, maybe the people have a right to know precisely what you are doing with all of that money and precisely how you are using it. And I think what classification has become, classified documents, top secret, all these different code names, so on and so forth, this has become a way for the government to stop its citizens from knowing what it's really doing and continuing to uphold a facade, a tissue of lies that is just ridiculous. When you look at everything that's happened, and again, I always point to just the last 20 years, 22 years, just look post 9/11, everything that's happened. Is this really a structure of government that can be trusted? I don't think so.
You know, speaking of, I would agree with you. I don't know who would come after Biden. Hillary Clinton is always there. And I've read that Afro Man wants to run for president, or John Bolton. I'm becoming a bit of an accelerationist, so I might vote, you know, Afro Man or John Bolton, or Hillary also wouldn't be a bad option. I mean, at this point where we are, I don't know what to tell you. I don't think we can restore things. I think we just have to hit the pedal to the metal. We're going to jump to our break. Stuart, again, find Stuart J. Hooper on Twitter at Stuart J. Hooper, and just type in his name on YouTube. You'll find his great YouTube channel where he does short analysis and, you know, less than 10 minutes, because everyone's attention span is just, you know, going down the tubes. We'll be right back on TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
All right, listen up, all of you boob lovers. I come bearing news. You may soon be able to see bare breasts on Facebook and Instagram. Now, before you get too excited, you need to know that the breasts on display will be limited to those belonging to trans and non-binary users. Women who are born female, their breasts will be seen only in your imagination. It's wokeness at its sickest. You can blame or credit Meta's oversight board for this breastful mess. Is that even a word? But it's not fair, you say? Well, Michael Huff, an LA-based attorney who was formerly a lesbian and who has transitioned to being a man, says the new policy is a violation of the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, telling the New York Post that cis women's breasts have been sexualized. However, breasts are not sex objects. They are to feed children, the original purpose for breasts. When balancing the interests of anyone's equal rights against another's, our individual rights and liberties must win, or we face a soapy, slippery slope. He didn't say soapy. So there you have it, the latest on the Free the Nipple movement. And yes, that movement is real. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint,
a global program for digital identity supported by the World Economic Forum, is well underway, but the mainstream media fails to report it and the dangers it presents to individual privacy and freedom from government control. Australia has a trusted digital identity framework. New Zealand has a digital identity services trust framework. And there's the Pan-Canadian Trust Framework. You get the picture. Governments clearly want our trust in this program, and several nations claim adopting digital identities will be voluntary, including Australia. but Australians were told COVID vaccines would be voluntary. That didn't stop the mandates. Australia's Digital Economy Strategy 2030 states we'll be succeeding when, quote, the significant majority of Australians over 18 are registered for MyGovID or other trusted digital identity, unquote. And that, quote, all new businesses are born digital through streamlined business registration. Is this really voluntary?
Thanks for listening to us. Now, we want to listen to you. Our lines are open from the U.S. and Canada. Call 1-888-201-6425. From the U.K., call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And we're back on our final segment with lecturer Stuart J. Hooper. Find him on Twitter at Stuart J. Hooper. That's there's different ways to spell Stuart. I know this. His name is S-T-U-A-R-T. And subscribe to his YouTube and call in. Don't be shy. Don't be lazy. You know, Ukraine, Stuart, maybe we can talk about that. Things aren't accelerating quickly, but slowly. You know, Medvedev just tweeted out today saying, I guess talking about Poland's ex-president, he says Poland's ex-president is rocking, saying it's time for the Poles to finish off Russia and China with Germany's hands. Attaboy, the skills of a socialist Poland security services paid instigator regarding really shining through, way to go. There's talks of, you know, it's the end of January, so perhaps in February or March, you know, more bombs flying off. Neither, you know, both sides are just digging in, doubling down. There does not seem to be, you know, any, you know, hopes of talks. And I was just reading as well that we've got the START treaty. People are talking about how Russia is not allowing inspections. I mean, just you look everywhere, things just don't look good. How are you assessing the Ukraine situation?
Yeah, that's exactly where I was at the end of last year. None of this was looking good. Nobody is seemingly trying to push for an end to this conflict, neither the Russians nor the West. And now there are estimates up to 300,000 dead or injured on just the Russian side, and around the same for the Ukrainians as well. Even if you scope those estimates down a bit, let's just say it's 100,000 on each side. That's still a ridiculously high number. These are families that have been torn apart, lives that have been lost forever to this conflict. But there are moves which can be interpreted, I think, in a couple of different ways. When you look at the tanks, for example, so the tank story is today's big update regarding the war in Ukraine. This could be seen in a couple of ways. I think you could see it negatively in the sense of, well, is this going to continue to drag on? Is this going to continue to push the war in a direction of conflict? Or perhaps a little bit more positively, is this something that might finally push both sides closer to the negotiating table? If they know that they're now going to get into these big modern tank battles, this may be something that may, and again, this is being super optimistic, it may bring them to the position of thinking, maybe it's time to talk, maybe we don't want to get into a protracted land war, because they are right now both relatively stuck. This is the problem of winter. It's the problem of fighting in trenches. This could move things forward. But there is, of course, the real danger of escalation. We've gone from, we don't want to give them javelins, but let's give them javelins. We don't want to give them HIMARS, but okay, give them HIMARS. We don't want to give them Patriot missile systems, but let's go ahead and give them to them. We don't want to give them Bradleys, the APCs. Well, let's go ahead and give them to them. We don't want to give them tanks, but yep, you guessed it. Let's go ahead and give them the tanks. This is slowly but surely escalating. I think the West is looking at this and thinking Russia has been inept on the battlefield. The responses to all of those prior systems have not been adequate. The Russians are on the ropes. Let's keep pushing. Let's win this war and do some significant harm to the Russians. Well, that may be true, but that does not guarantee that the Russian response will continue to be inept. We don't know what they've been building up over the winter months. We're all expecting this coming spring offensive. Maybe they'll end up pushing through Ukrainian lines to quite a significant degree. And of course, they do always have the big red button. Nuclear conflict is still a very real possibility here. And I think if we continue to ratchet up the ladder of military technologies, we're now at main battle tanks. I think from here, we're talking fighters and bombers, modern Western fighters and bombers. Well, eventually you are going to hit that nuclear tipping point. So the question for the West right now is, how far do you want to push the nuclear taboo? The idea that, well, nuclear weapons are just so bad and they have such a terrible reputation, nobody will ever use them. Well, yes, that has held true since the end of World War II. The nuclear taboo is very, very, very strong. Some people argue it's the most powerful, informal restraint on international relations that exists in the world. Lots of other things have been broken, promises, slowly but surely over the years. But the nuclear taboo has held strong. There has not been a nuclear attack on a battlefield or anywhere else for that matter, in the sense of an attack, since the end of World War II. Well, again, that's not guaranteed to hold. Yes, it has held since the end of World War II, but how far do you want to push this? I think what needs to happen is we need structured debates and discussions, because they are going to be debates between both sides. And of course, you need the willingness of both the Ukrainians and the Russians to do this. I think this just needs to be consistently reminded of the combatants on both sides. There is a point where this goes beyond anybody's control. And that's the point that we do not want to reach as a species.
There's, I saw on the telegrams, someone posted an old color map from March 1939 from some magazine. So I guess this is before World War II, but nonetheless applicable, of course, to what's going on today. I mean, this is, many people have said, you know, John Helmer, my past guest, that what's going on now is simply a continuation of World War II. Others have compared it to World War I. And this 1939 March map says the next European war will start in the Ukraine. And, you know, I was looking back at, from time to time, I look back at some of my old material. I was getting mentions from my past guests, Merrill Nass, bioweapons expert, and Sam Husseini on their Substacks, referencing my interview with Francis Boyle. I was the first to interview him on the Corona stuff. And I did interview with him subsequently last year about the stuff we're talking about. And I think just the thesis is timeless. He says, Putin, after Munich, I think that he's referring to the Munich Security Conference in 2008, said, Putin decided we better rearm. The ultimate objective is Russia, no question. Unlimited imperialism, is he's referring to the West, will try and conquer the entire world if they can get away with it. Unless they are stopped, the US intends to conquer as much of the world as they can. They will continue until an organized group of people stand up to stop them. It does appear Putin and Xi have decided to stand up to try and stop it. We are 2 minutes to midnight. Actually, we're 1.5 minute to midnight, 90 seconds, if you caught the doomsday clock from the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, Stuart. They just this week brought us down to 1.5 minutes. I guess that's the closest we've been to the apocalypse. So about a minute and a half left. You know, any other thoughts, final thoughts, Stuart?
Well, I think they're absolutely on point. That's an organization that is trying to raise the alarm bells. And I also think what you're saying about Russia and China trying to oppose Western imperialism, yes, that's correct. The problem, though, for all of us that are critics of Western imperialism is that going about that with open conflict, as Russia has done here, that was not the right move. Because now, look at the new boss. Looks a lot like the old boss.
The new boss, same as the old boss. Always great to catch up. Stuart, come on more often. I know you're busy grading papers and stuff like that. But in any case, follow Stuart on Twitter, Stuart J. Hooper, as well as on YouTube. Thank you again, and I hope you have a very productive year, Stuart.
Thanks for the time, Havori. Always great to be here. I'll be back soon.
Yes, and if people want to call in, nobody called in. Maybe y'all were having dinner or something, but try to call in next hour with Tim Hincliffe of Sociable. We'll be right back after the break.